being said today about teaching values. In fact, as parents, we are realizing more and more that we have values we want our children to embrace. How do we pass them on to our children without lecturing them and turning our kids off? In this session, Scott and Joanne give several practical ways to teach values to children, and then they give you several examples of how they have taught values in their families.
Teaching values is very important in family life. In fact, teaching values helps children to grow wise. Foolishness is rampant in children. They're kind of born foolish, and some of them don't grow out of that. It was just recently that I heard of three teenage boys that were in a car. They went out bumping. Do you know what bumping is? I had never heard of bumping. Bumping is where you go over a bump and see how high you can get the car to come off the ground. Well, they went out to some railroad track bump, and they were trying to bump over the railroad track. So they hit it about 60 miles an hour, and the car landed in a tree 10 feet up. Of all the foolish things that we could pray that our children don't get themselves involved in. Our goal is to help our children be wise so they don't find themselves in such crazy experiences. We're going to share with you a secret this evening that will help your children to become wise.
Scott and I teach about the family in a variety of different contexts. We counsel with parents and with children, helping them to learn to be successful together as a family. But we're not parenting experts. We don't claim to have all the answers. One young man who really loved children thought that he would write a book. Even before he had children of his own, he decided he would write a book, and that would be entitled, How to Raise Responsible, Successful Children. Well, eventually he got married and had children of his own. And when his first child started getting around 2-3 years old, he decided, you know, I need to get down and write that book, but I think I'll make it a little shorter than I had intended, and I'll entitle it A Few Ideas About Raising Children. Well, he continued on, and his child entered into those elementary school years, and he said, well, you know, maybe I'll just write a booklet, and I'll entitle it Raising Children is One of the Toughest Jobs in the World. Well, by the time his child became a teenager, he just created a flyer which read, Help! You see, the only people who are parenting experts don't have children. We don't claim to be experts, but we've just talked with lots of families, we've worked with lots of families and children, and put together these ideas as secrets to help you and your families, things that have been successful in other places that we hope will be successful in your family as well.
Raising children can be a wonderful experience, filled with joy, excitement, anticipation, fun. It can also be a really scary experience when you think of those children moving toward adolescence. You think of our children becoming adults? It can be a rather scary experience for us. In this session, we're going to share a secret with you that can prepare your children to move toward adolescence successfully. If you have teenagers, and you're here because you have teenagers, you're trying to work with them, the secret we're going to share with you is an excellent way for you to communicate your values to those teens.
We all have in mind the type of people we want our children to become. As we think about our children, we think about them growing up. We want them to incorporate these values into their lives. We want them to have a strong commitment to Christ, to be growing Christians, to have a love and a concern for other people, to be well-educated, to be successful in the things that they enjoy doing. These are values that we have, Christian values that we might have for our children.
One of the best ways to help your children to become wise is to teach them your values. Values become a core way in which wisdom can be passed on to your children. I went on vacation with several friends a few years back, and a couple of the guys were talking and lamenting about Little League Baseball and their kids being in that Little League Baseball program. It turns out that their children were in a little league that was very competitive, and the parents were often yelling at the coaches or yelling at the other team. The coaches were yelling at the children. Everyone was yelling at the umpires. And the atmosphere in that little league was not something conducive or what my friends wanted to see their children being a part of. But they loved baseball, and they wanted their children to be a part of baseball. So while we were on vacation, they designed a new little league. They went home, and they started a new little league in their town. And that little league emphasized a different set of values. It was still baseball. They still kept score. They still ran bases. They still had teams. All of that was still the same, but they had some more rules that dealt with fan participation. Parents, every parent, when they signed up their kid, had to sign a pledge of support that described the kinds of things those parents could do in when they were on the field and things they were encouraged not to do. All the coaches were encouraged to be nurturing with the children. And the umpires were encouraged to build relationships with the students off the field or even in the midst of some of the practices. You see, the rules that were established for that baseball league were a little more than the rules that happened just in regular baseball. And the rules demonstrated some different values. These men who went back off that vacation and started this new little league, they had some more values they wanted to bring to that little league game. And so they developed some more rules to implement those values to the game of baseball.
Now, how do we teach values to our children in our own family, in our homes? That we all have values that we have for ourselves, and we'd like our children to incorporate them, to embrace them, and take them on as their own. And as our children grow, they begin to do that. They take on the values that they understand, that make sense to them. There may be some other values that they don't take on as theirs. So when our children are young, we have a window of opportunity in their lives to be incorporating values into them so that they can grow then and take them on as their own as they get older.
The secret to raising wise children is to use family rules to teach values. Now, when you think of rules, you might just be thinking of a list of do's and don'ts that you want your children to adhere to. And certainly they are lists of things that our children adhere to, or we try to have them adhere to. But rules can be much more than that. Rules can communicate values to our children if we do some things to incorporate them fully into our family. For example, when we teach our children at the table to say, excuse me, we teach our children to say, excuse me, before interrupting someone. Now, that's a rule that we have in our family, that you need to say, excuse me, before you interrupt someone. But also, it's teaching them a value. It's teaching them to listen to others first before they respond. It's teaching them to respect other people. So there's values behind the rules that we're teaching in our family.
We see the rules as values put into action. They show the children what the values look like. They kind of put the hands and feet to the values. The rules are important because they're a vehicle to teach the values. We want our children to understand the value behind the rules, but the rules help children know kind of what it looks like. Okay, we understand this value, but how do I live it out? And that's what the rule is for.
In the Old Testament, God designed the family to be the place where rules and values are passed on from one generation to another. In Deuteronomy, some instructions are given to parents which say, here's how you can pass these values on. First, you need to obey all the rules yourself, Deuteronomy 6 says. Secondly, you need to sit your children down and instruct them. But thirdly, it says, teach them in the way. Teach them in the course of life the values that you hold dear when they rise up in the morning, when they go to bed at night, when they're eating, when they're walking along the way, are all opportunities to pass on values to our children. Now, when we sit around our table, we have 7 people that eat around our table. Now, when you have 7 people sitting around a table, you have to have some guidelines about how you're going to handle eating, because some children, they just pass me this, or give me that, give me this. So we tell our children they have to say three things. First, they say the person's name. Then they say, would you please pass? Then they say the thing they want passed. So Melissa, would you please pass the green beans? And then Melissa will pass the green beans. Instead of just calling out, they use that little system, a rule that we have, in order to get them to have an orderly dinner and pass those things in a reasonable way. Now, some children, I think, believe that the Greek word for amen is go. You know, I mean, they think that amen is the Greek word for go. And so as soon as we pray, we say amen, they are, please pass that, please. They look for their favorite thing wherever it is, and that's what they want. And so we've taught them, no, what we want you to do is take what's in front of you, take some of it, and then pass that on to the next person and so on, and things will eventually get to you. And so just be patient, take what's in front of you and go. Now, one family, we were teaching this to their children, and Jack was 5 years old, and he was eager to put this into practice. So when they said amen, Jack took the plate of chicken and offered it to his little sister, Cheryl, who was 3, and he said, Cheryl, which piece would you like? Oh, well, Cheryl was delighted that Jack was serving her. And so she was thinking, though, through the anatomy of a chicken, and she says, I'll take the hand. Well, Jack was hungry, but he's being pretty patient at this point. And so he says to his sister, Cheryl, a chicken doesn't have a hand. Choose something else. Well, she's thinking, she says, okay, I'll take a foot. Now Jack's getting a little hungry here. Mom and Dad are starting to snicker. And so Jack says to Cheryl, "Cheryl, chicken don't have feet, they fly. Now pick something else." So Cheryl's relishing this attention. Jack's getting a little frustrated. And so Cheryl says, "Okay, I'll take the head." Now Mom and Dad are getting ready to laugh and walk away from the table. Jack is getting pretty irritated now, and he says, "Cheryl, Mom doesn't cook the head. Choose something else." And she says, she's thinking the only other body part she knows. She says, "Okay, give me the belly button." Jack, Mom and Dad are just laughing. They can't control it anymore. Jack takes a piece of chicken. He says, "Here's the breast. This is the closest we can get." We want to teach our children values, and one of the ways we do that is around the table as we're teaching manners to our children.
Now, sometimes in a family, parents will see a problem, see some misbehaving or something they want to change, and they just create more rules. But more rules may not really address the problem. If you tell one child to share their bike helmet with the other child, well, that's a rule in a sense. It's an obedience issue, and that's important. But if you ask a child, "Are you being loving?" then we begin to address the values. You see, as we work with our children, the values are very important because as children get older, the rules are going to change, but the values stay the same. When a child is young, you may have a rule that says, okay, when you go outside to play, you can play in the front yard or the backyard. Those are the boundaries. You need to stay in the yard. That's the rule. Well, the child may get a little bit older, and then the boundaries are expanded. Okay, now you may play down to your friend's house, two houses down, and you can go up this far as the telephone pole. The boundaries has changed. So in a sense, the rule has changed, but the value is the same. That personal safety that you're valuing is going to be the same. As children continue to grow, the rules are going to change for them. You're not going to have the same rules when children are older as you did when they were younger. But you want them to understand the value behind the rule so that they can adjust those rules. And even they themselves will be adjusting the rules. They'll be adapting to a new situation. The rule may not apply here, but the value will still apply. So we want our children to understand the values behind the rule so as they grow, they can, in a sense, govern themselves with those values.
How many of you are planning on having teenagers? If you're going to let your children live past 12 years old, you're going to have a teenager. And so you need to be ready for that. This principle that we're sharing is very important in working with teens. Teenagers are at that age where they start questioning the rules that you've set up. They don't want to abide by the rules that have been established for all these years. And part of that is justifiably so. They're growing up. They need the boundaries to be expanded. They begin to question the rules. Now, as they do that, they need to be able to translate the rules from childhood into new rules for adolescence and adulthood, because they're going to start making their own rules. They're going to start making their own decisions as they grow older. There's a language that helps them translate rules from childhood into rules for adolescence. And that language is values. So it's very important for us to teach the values that we hold dear to our children. Because as we teach them the values that are behind the rules that we've established and that we live by in our family, then our children grow up with the ability to create new rules, to apply the rules that we saw in this situation to a new situation appropriately. That's what we want to do with our children. We want to use family rules to teach them values, because values are what's going to help them to be wise in life.
So when our children are young, we are responsible to govern their behavior. We make up the rules, in a sense. We tell them what they can do and what they can't do. But as they grow and they get older, they begin to make those choices themselves. If we just give them a list of do's and don'ts, if we only give them the rules, we're not equipping them really to make those decisions as they get older. We want them to know how to weigh out the decisions, to make choices based on the good of others sometimes or a long-term benefit. So we want to help our children understand the values so they can make those wise choices on their own as they grow. When children are young, we're making those decisions for them. As they get older, they're going to be making decisions for themselves. So we want them to understand the underlying values as when they're young and as they're growing, so that it will make sense to them when they get older. See, what we put into our children when they're young has a lot to do with what comes out down the road.
We want to illustrate this idea of teaching children values through rules. And we want to do that. I'm going to put on this apron. Okay, now I'm putting on this apron. And there we go. A nice hat, cook's hat. And this is a big pot here with lots of vegetables. Now, you see, being a parent is a lot like being a cook. We're taking ingredients and putting into our children and helping them to grow and develop. And in fact, what I want to illustrate here is that this pot represents my child's future. And I'm going to, as my child is young, influence pretty heavily what goes into the pot. As our children are young, we can control a lot of the decisions that are being made for them. And we can make those decisions so that we know what's going into the pot. And we control that. Now, as our child gets older, we allow them to have more control over what goes into the pot. So it's not just us as adults making decisions, but we allow our children to have a part of that decision-making process. If we give our children too much freedom too early in that decision-making process, that can be disastrous. But if we wait a long time and maintain a lot of control, then instantly give a lot of freedom, we can be equally as damaging. So the key to teaching children values is to use our family rules. That's what we say. The secret to raising wise children is to use family rules to teach values. And so we're trying to use values to decide what goes into the pot. This pot represents my child's future as I try to create some soup. And I've got a lot of good things I want to put in this soup. I've got some zucchini here, a lot of good vegetables.
Hey, Dad, what you doing?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm making some soup, and this soup represents your future. And boy, do we have some good vegetables we're putting in this. This is great. Look at this carrot. Boy, that's going to be
Dad?
Yeah?
I don't like vegetables.
Oh. Well, you know, one of the problems is that's all we eat is vegetable soup. Now, my child's either going to learn to like vegetable soup or she's going to eat anyway because that's what's available. And I'm making a lot of decisions, especially as she's young, about what's going to go into the pot. And so I may put in things like brushing your teeth, being generous, going to Sunday school, taking piano lessons. I may put a lot of things into the pot because those are very important things and that's what's healthy. So, you know, I'm sorry. We're going to have vegetable soup. That's what we eat. And so look at this nice onion. I know you like onions, so we'll put...
Hey, you know, Dad, I've got an idea.
What's that?
You know, I was over at Karen's house the other day and they put noodles in their soup. Can we put noodles in the soup?
Noodles.
Noodles, yeah. Be good, huh?
Well, I wasn't thinking about having noodles in this soup. But, you know, there's sometimes when, because I want to partner with my daughter and allow her to influence what goes into the pot, that I allow her to make suggestions about what we're going to put into the soup. And so she may say that she wants to take flute lessons, for example. Now, flute lessons were never my favorite instrument, but because that's what she likes, I might say, okay, well, we'll go ahead and let you take flute lessons because I want her to have an influence about what goes into the pot. That's important for her to be able to decide some of the things about her future. So, okay, I think it'll be okay. We'll put noodles into
great,
the soup.
Great, thanks,
Sounds
Dad.
Fine.
That's
but we're
great.
Also putting this nice pepper
great,
in there.
You know,
great.
Dad, I've got another idea.
What's that?
Ketchup. I love ketchup. Can we put ketchup in the soup?
Oh, brother. Now, look. What's wrong with ketchup? Anything wrong with ketchup? No. Ketchup's a food, isn't it? Now, there's nothing wrong with ketchup. In fact, other families might even make their soup with ketchup. But, you know, one of the things that happens is that when you add ketchup to the soup, it changes the flavor of the soup. And I'm not sure I want to have ketchup-flavored soup. So there's sometimes when we take something that might not ordinarily be bad and we say, I'm sorry, we're not going to do that. We're going to, maybe other people do, but we aren't going to do that. And we're going to say no. So maybe some of you allow your children to live in messy rooms. But in my family, we make our children clean their rooms. That's just something we do. So if you're going to be a Taransky, I know most of you aren't Taranskys, but if you're going to be a Taransky, you're going to clean your room. That's just part of who we are. So, you know, I'm going to have to say no to this ketchup. We're not going to be able to put ketchup in the soup. Sorry.
Oh.
But I do have this broccoli. Ooh, doesn't that look good?
Great. Broccoli.
Broccoli.
Hey, you yes. know what, Dad?
What's that?
I found some flowers. Aren't they pretty?
Those are beautiful.
They're really nice. Let's put them in the soup.
What?
Come on.
No, we're not putting flowers in the soup.
Come on, Dad. What's wrong with it?
Ah, one of the three things children say to us, especially teens, when they want to bypass the grid that we have. We've established a grid, like a recipe of what we want to go in the soup. Our children love to question that recipe. They want to get behind it. They want to get around it. And one of the ways they do that is they say,
what's wrong with it?
Now, what's wrong with flowers? Well, there's nothing wrong with flowers. Those are very pretty flowers. I'm not even sure what would happen if you put them in the soup. And sometimes children don't understand. They've got great ideas of how they'd like to influence the soup. So a young lady might say, I would like to go and spend time over at the mall and hang out at the mall. Or I'd like to go to this party on Friday night. Or I'd like to spend time with my boyfriend over at his house when his parents are home after school. And pretty soon, the soup changes. And things happen in those environments that may not be. What's wrong with those things? Well, there's nothing wrong with any of them. But as a parent, I know that because of my experience, that certain things happen in those situations. And I don't want to allow that to happen. And so there are some times when I'll have to say,
no, I'm sorry. We're not going to put flowers in the soup.
No flowers in the soup.
Nope. Sorry.
Okay.
But we do have a green pepper to go in there. Right. That'll be yummy.
Hey, how about some water, Dad? Let's put some water in the
water,
soup.
Water, okay.
Sure.
Where did you get that water?
The lake.
Lake? No way. We're not putting lake water in our soup.
Come on, Dad. Everybody's doing it.
Ah, that's the second thing that people say, to go around the grid that we've established as parents for what goes in. You know, the sad thing is everybody is doing it. All kinds of other people are making soup with lake water. And I don't understand why they're doing it, but they're out there doing it. They're making soup with lake water. And, you know, I wrote an article once for a magazine about television called The Television Trap. And I looked at several studies that were done, clinical studies on children. It was fascinating to see that preschoolers who watched adventure shows were more aggressive in their play afterwards than those children who didn't watch the adventure shows. It affected them. Now, we all know that, men, as we go watch an exciting movie at the theater and then we come out and we feel like we're the hero driving home, don't we? Well, TV or movies affect us. Another study that was done on women who watch soap operas, and they asked women, how many hours of soap operas do you watch in a given week? And then they compared that to their perception of reality. They asked them questions like, what are the chances that you're going to be the victim of a violent crime? What is the percentage of people that are unhappy in their marriage relationships? What is the percentage of people that commit adultery? So they ended up asking a number of questions, and the study demonstrated that women who watch a higher level of soap operas also have a disproportionate sense of reality. Movies and TVs influence us. And so some of you are saying, well, I've got that wired. I don't let my children watch any movies that have nudity or bad language in them. But just for a minute, look at some of the values behind the movies. You know, a movie can make adultery look pretty attractive. When the mate is a real bum and the person's falling in love with this other person, it makes it look like adultery is the reasonable thing to do. And any reasonable person would choose that. What are the values behind the things that we're teaching our children? It is true that everyone is doing it. Well, not everyone, because in my family, we're not doing it. We're going to take a stand on some things, and we're going to say, no, I'm sorry. We're not going to put lake water in the soup. Sorry.
Okay.
But I do have some potatoes. These are good.
Vegetables.
A little dirt on them, but that won't hurt you. Yes.
Hey, Dad, I got an idea. Here's something we can put in the soup.
What's
dirt.
That? Dirt? No
yeah,
way. We don't put dirt in the soup. No way.
Just a little bit won't hurt.
Ah, that's the third thing that children say to get around the grid that we establish, the recipe that we have for them. A little bit won't hurt. And I don't care whether you're talking about junk food or TV or whatever it is. We're not trying to ask the questions of how much poison can we put into our system before we get damaged. We're asking a completely different question because we're trying to create some gourmet soup. And a cook who's creating gourmet soup makes choices based on what's best, tries to make wise choices about what's going to be put in the soup. Now, I want to suggest that we're making soup of our children's future. And the things that we put in now are going to influence them for years and years to come. And someday, we're going to take that pot of soup and we're going to hand it to our child. And we're going to say, here, this is your future. And we're going to say, here's the best that I could do. And when we do that, we're passing on a whole set of values to them that we have added to the soup. So, here's your future.
Thanks, Dad.
You're welcome. You know, as parents, we're all trying to build values into our children in order to help them to be wise. And we do that by teaching them rules. Now, what we're going to do now is give you some examples of some rules and some values that you can look at for your own family. We're going to share with you some rules and values that we each have in our own families that we've taught our children. We're not asking you to just take these rules or values and copy them for your family. You may like some of the things you hear and implement them, and that's fine. But we're primarily doing this as a way of illustrating what we want you to do in your own family. We want you to take some time and look at your values, look at your rules, tie them together so that you can communicate wisdom to your children. That's our goal here, is to help our children be wise so that they can translate the rules from childhood into the rules they're going to create, the standards they're going to have for themselves as they get older.
So we're going to talk about some family rules now. We're just going to go through the different rules that start with young children, some rules that we have for young children, and then we're going to talk about some other rules that can be adapted for older children and how we teach value through those rules. Now, we start in our family with three basic family rules. When children are young, you want to keep things very simple so they understand what's going on. Not a lot of words, but just the bare facts you want your children to learn. So with our very young children, we start with three rules, just three rules in the family. And just about anything that can go wrong in a family, it falls under this category, one of these three rules. The rules are obey, be kind, and show respect. That's all we need to teach young children. If we can teach them those three rules, which are actually values themselves, then we're going a long way with our children. And as we talked in a couple sessions back about the positive conclusion, we ask, why was that wrong? Children can respond with one of those three rules. What rule are you breaking? I wasn't obeying, or I wasn't being kind, or it wasn't respectful. Sometimes they broke all three of them at the same time. But those are the three main rules, which are actually values, that we teach to young children. It keeps it very simple in the family. The kids know that's what they need to do. Obey, be kind, and show respect. And it's helpful for young children. Now, Scott and I are going to each share about some other specific rules that we've taught our children, we've taught in our families, and the value that they communicate. When children are young, toddlers, preschoolers, we have what we call survival skills. We want these children to learn things that are helpful for them just to be successful in life. If they can learn them in those preschool years, in those toddler years, they'll go a long way being able to really be successful in their relationships with other people and in the family. Two of the values that we want to teach very young children right off the bat is self-discipline and respect for authority. Those are two values that children need to incorporate into their lives. Now, one of the rules that we use to teach that to young children is the come when you're called rule. This is basically, you can tell by the name of it what this rule is. The children need to learn to come when they're called. It's a survival skill for toddlers, for preschoolers, 2, 3, 4 years old. Children need to learn to come. If mom or dad is calling them, they need to learn to come. So we teach them the come when you're called rule. Now, it may sound great, okay, but how do you teach that? My children don't come. I call them and they don't come. We try and give a firm instruction, but my children aren't here, so I can't do that. So I'm going to talk to you about how I taught the come when you're called rule to Timothy when he was 2 years old, to just give you an idea of how we might do this in a family, how you might do it with your children, or teach them even some other rule, but just as an example. So Timothy was 2 years old, and I said to him, Tim, we're going to learn something new today. It's called the come when you're called rule. This is how we're going to play. When I say your name, you're going to come close to me and say, what, Mom? Doesn't matter if you're playing or if you're in the other room or if wherever you are. When you hear me call your name, you need to come and say, what, Mom? That's how we do this. Because it's important for you to learn that when you hear me calling you, you need to come. You see, we don't want to be yelling to our children down the street or across a parking lot or through the park. We don't want to be yelling instructions. If we could just call their name, have them come close to us, and then we can talk to them about something they may be doing wrong or instruction we want to give or the next thing that's going to happen. We want to be able to communicate with our children in that way. So I explained that to Tim, how it was going to work, and then we started to practice. We didn't want to just practice when it was time for discipline or when I was out with him at the park, but I wanted to practice right away at home as he was going to learn this new rule. So I said, okay, Tim, this is what we're going to do. We're here in the kitchen. I want you to just go over to the other side of the kitchen, go stand by the refrigerator, and I'm going to call your name, and we're going to practice. Okay? Go ahead, Tim. Why don't you go stand over there? So I stood on the side of the kitchen. I said, hey, Tim, come here. And he came running over and said, what, Mom? I said, that's great. You've done it. This is wonderful. Okay, let's try again. Why don't you go in the playroom this time, a little further away, but we're going to play it the same way. You just go over there and listen for me to call you. So he went into the playroom, and I said, Tim, come here. And he came running over. Great, you've done it. That's great. Okay, now we're going to make the game a little harder. I told him to go play. I gave him 15 minutes. He had to continue to, you know, do whatever he was doing then. He was involved in a project. And I said, Timothy, come here. Well, Timothy didn't come. Right? He had forgotten all about this game we were playing. He was into his other game that he was playing. So I went over and I got him and I reminded him, from now on, when I call your name, I tell you to come, you need to come quickly and say, what, Mom? That's how we're going to play. We continued to practice. Initially, we want it to be easy to obey, but then as he's getting the hang of it, then we make it a little more difficult. We may practice at the park, or we may practice when he's out playing with his friends. Sometimes, just in a positive way, you know, he'd come running over and I'd say, oh, I just want to tell you I love you, or I just want to see how fast you could come. We continued to play throughout the day, the next couple days, for a week. It became a part of our interaction together. He was learning a new skill, and I was giving him plenty of time to practice and plenty of time to be successful, so that in a situation where he needed to come quickly for discipline or because, you know, we didn't need to leave the park and he didn't want to leave, he was in the habit of doing it. So we practiced in a positive way first. You know, Timothy had so much fun with this game that he would come up to me and say, Mom, let's play that game where you call me and you see how fast I come. And he had a great time with it because he was successful. So he was learning a new rule and he was learning to be successful first before we needed it in a discipline situation. So that's the come when you're called rule.
Teaching self-discipline and respect. But it's also a rule that just demonstrates honor to each other. We don't want to be yelling across. If I yell at my son across the parking lot, I don't want him to say, what do you want? No, I want him to run over. We'll talk nicely. And so there's this way of interacting with him that shows that we value each other. Similarly, sometimes in the house, my son will yell, Dad. Now, sometimes I too, out of respect for him, will go to him instead of yelling across the house. What do you want? Other times I'll teach him, look, I don't want you going around the house yelling for me. Come and find me. So there's a sense in which we're valuing each other. We're not yelling across city blocks in order to communicate discipline or displeasure or whatever it might be. So the come when you're called rule is one of the rules that we teach preschoolers. There are a number of rules which teach the value of self-discipline to children. Young children need to learn those two primary character qualities, which is responsiveness to authority and self-discipline. When our girls, Megan and Elizabeth, came to live in our family, they were just turning 4 years old. They didn't understand any of these things. We realized then that they needed to learn some survival skills, so we started with the come with your call, when you're called rule. We also then taught them a couple of other rules. We found that we would go into people's homes. You see, we couldn't even take them into public at first. We would go into someone's home and the girls would disappear and they'd come back with some stuffed animal off of someone's bed or something else out of the bedroom. We're always afraid of what they might bring us. We would go into a store and they'd want to take something off the shelf. And so we decided that we were going to develop a new rule called a no-touch rule with them. This is another survival skill that preschoolers need. One of them is to learn how to deal with take a break, as we talked about last week. A second one is the come when you're called rule. A third one is the no touch rule. Let me tell you how I taught this to my girls. They were 4 years old, and we knew we had to do something. And so I remember I chose a day to work on this that was convenient for me. And I was working on the car and had to go to the auto parts store. And so I said to him, who wants to go to the auto parts store? And 3 4-year-olds raised their hand. Remember, I have Ben and then Megan and Elizabeth. And so I said, okay, great. Now I'm going to teach you something new today. We're going to go into this store and come back out and nobody's going to touch anything. When we go in that store, your hands do not touch anything. That's the rule. That's called the no touch rule. Your hands do not touch anything. We're going to get in and out of that store and that's how it's going to happen. Now, that's really important because if you want to go on a trip with me, you have to be responsible. Okay, you have to be self-disciplined. In order to be self-disciplined, in this case, it means I don't want you to touch anything. So we go into the auto parts store, and we actually spent about 15 minutes in there, not because I needed to get something, but I kept watching them. You know, hey, whoa, no, we don't touch anything, remember? And we're going through, looking at all, what can you hurt in an auto parts store? I figured it was a great place to practice this. Well, I turned around to get what I needed, and here comes Ben. Dad, look at this. And he's carrying it and bringing it toward me. Oh, Ben, I'm so disappointed. And we got out of there, got out of the store, went and got in the car. And on the way home, I'm saying, I'm so disappointed, Ben, that you picked something up. Remember the no-touch rule? We don't touch anything. And we got home, and I told him, Ben, you know, if you can't obey the no-touch rule. I'm not going to be able to take you with me shopping like that. Well, I got home, started working on the car, and as it is, when I'm working on the car, pretty soon again, I had to go to the auto parts store. And so I said, who wants to go to the auto parts store with me? And 3 4-year-olds raise their hand. I said, okay, let's go. Oh, Ben, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to go because, remember, you touched something last time. So we left Ben at home with Mom crying and crying because he couldn't go on this trip. Isn't it amazing how easy it is to please kids at 4 years old? When they get to be older, it's a lot harder to do so. But here we're going on this trip now to the auto parts store, and I'm saying to the girls, now remember the rule. All the way in, I'm talking about the no-touch rule. We're walking through the door. I say, remember the no-touch rule? We get in and out of the store. They don't touch anything. On the way home, I'm saying, this is great. You guys are learning the no-touch rule. This is super. We come back home, and I'm starting to work on the car, and as is often the case when I'm working on the car, I had to go back to the auto parts store again. And so I said, who wants to go to the auto parts store? And 3 4-year-olds raised their hand. I said, Ben, do you think you can do the right thing this time? Okay, let's go. So the three of them and I went to the auto parts store. We got in and out of the store without touching anything. Boy, I gave them so much praise. This is great. We're doing really well. We practiced the no-touch rule. When we were in the video store, I told them, look, I'll let you check out a video if you don't touch anything. I'm going to go pick out mine first, then I'm going to come back. And if you have not touched any, then I will let you. But if you pick one up and bring it to me, then you're not going to get to check one out. You got to whittle it down some way. You can't have all these videos when you got 5 kids. So we say, okay, look, so we let them try to find. We practice the no-touch rule in the video store. We practice in the bank with those dangerous devices, you know, that kids always hang themselves on. We practice there. You don't touch that. We go in someone's house. You don't touch anything. So we practice the no-touch rule continually. And it must have taken us 2 or 3 months at least, going into public places, practicing the no-touch rule, reminding them continually. And then one day, I remember we went into the Hallmark store. And I was so proud of my kids because they could go in and out of the Hallmark store and they didn't touch anything. And that's when we started getting these comments from the cashiers. Oh, your children are so well behaved. Yeah, well, you don't know how much work we put into getting to this stage, you know. But the no-touch rule became very important. Well, I remember one Saturday morning really well. I had to go to the Sears repair store. And I took my 3 younger children. And when we were in there, they didn't touch anything, but they were bouncing off the walls, playing tag, and the person in the store, I'm waiting in line with my number, you know, and the guy says, whose kids are those? And I feel like crawling in a hole. And it was on that day we developed a new rule. That rule is called the don't be wild rule. When we're in public, there are certain times when wildness is not appropriate. Now, we know that children need to be children, and there's times we want to let them run. We want to let them be kids. But there are other times where children should not be wild. So when we're in church or we're in the library or when we're in someone's home, we'll often be going through the door and say, remember the 2 rules, don't touch, the no-touch rule, and the don't be wild rule. We'll just remind them. That's a 4th survival skill for preschoolers. If they can learn those 4 survival skills, you'll have given them a lot in this area of self-discipline. You see, we're trying to teach them the value of self-discipline. If you've got children who are 7, 8, 9 years old who haven't learned the no-touch rule, who haven't learned the come when you're called rule, who haven't learned the don't be wild rule, you need to go back and teach them that because those are very important rules. You need to go over it like a drill sergeant until you get it down and they could follow those rules. Those become necessary ingredients, and upon those skills, you're able to build some other things. Children we find who have attention deficit, for example, one of the things they have a hard time with is self-discipline. Don't wait till they're 10, 12 years old to try to teach these things. You want to start them at 3, 4, or 5 years old. You know something's going on with those kids. They're a little wild on the wild side. Teach them self-discipline. The value of self-discipline is so important with those children.
So as children are in the store and they're eager to touch something and they're not grabbing at it, they're developing that self-discipline. That value is becoming a part of who they are. They're learning to control themselves in that situation, and that's really helpful for children to learn. And I hope you're hearing that as we're teaching these rules, we're talking about the value and we're practicing the rules. We can't just expect that we'll go home and tell our child we're going to have this new rule and have them know how to do it and be self-disciplined about it. But we need to practice the rules. We need to work through them with our kids, be patient with them as they're learning the rules, but keep reminding them as we go into the store. Don't be wild now. Remember the no-touch rule. Reminding them and practicing the rules can help to develop these values in our children. As children get a little older, we want to incorporate some other values in their lives. And another rule that we teach children in the family is the stop rule. The stop rule teaches children the value of their own words and that they have personal boundaries that they can defend. This is how the stop rule works. If your children are involved in a tickling or a teasing game, and one of them wants to be done with the game, they just say stop, and the other children need to obey. So what this does is it cuts down on a lot of the teasing, the annoying. You know, sometimes kids are having a great time. They're playing, they're tickling, they're teasing each other. Everybody's having fun. And then somebody ends up getting angry or begins crying or is hurt by the situation. They're trying to stop, and the other one doesn't want to stop. So we developed this stop rule so the children can't take advantage of each other. But the value of their words is enough to defend themselves. They don't need to get involved in manipulative techniques. They don't need to start screaming or yelling or hitting, because all they need to do is say stop and the game is over. Now, this game works the same with adults as well as children. Dad may be having a great time tickling Billy, and Billy's having a great time for a while. Then Billy wants to be done. So Billy can say stop, and Dad stops the tickling. So it levels the playing field in a sense. Okay, we all have personal boundaries. We all can defend ourselves just with our words alone. We don't need to be involved in manipulation or other ways to kind of gain control over the other person. This is also helpful for children when they go into a new situation then, and they may try to use this, they don't like what's happening, and they say stop, and the other person's not stopping. Well, they know something's wrong then. So in a sense, it protects children against some abuses that may happen when they go outside the family, because they know that if they say stop, the other person's going to stop. And if that person doesn't stop, we have a problem, and we can go back and tell someone else about it, because that person's not listening to us. Our own words are enough to defend ourselves. So we teach children the stop rule. The babysitter comes in maybe and doesn't listen to the stop rule. My kids say, hey, wait a minute, don't you know the stop rule? My kids have taught other families the stop rule. They really feel offended. You know, if they say stop and the other person's not stopping, hey, wait a minute, don't you know the stop rule? You know, they realize that they should be able to just use words to allow the other person to stop what they're doing. Now, we were sharing this stop rule in a class several years ago, and afterwards, you know, people went away, and I met up with one of the women who was in the class a few weeks later, and she said to me, you know, Joanne, I didn't believe you, but it's true. It really worked. And I didn't know what she was talking about at the time, but she reminded me that she had been in the class, and she heard us teach about the stop rule, and she told me, you know, I went away from the class skeptical. I just didn't think that would work. My kids wouldn't listen to the stop rule, but, you know, one day I got so desperate that I went ahead and tried it, and I taught my kids the stop rule, and I couldn't believe it. It really worked. So she shared that story with me as encouragement that, you know, sometimes we don't know, we're just teaching these things, and we don't know if it's, you know, you're taking them home and putting them into practice. And although she left skeptical, she realized that when she was desperate enough that she tried it and it did work. So, but again, we're not teaching you these rules because the rules are the secret. We're just sharing with you some rules that we use in our families that we have found helpful in other families. And you may want to have different rules in your own family, but we just want to share these rules because they are teaching values to our children that we believe are important.
This is the end of this tape. We hope this session has been a valuable one for you. Maybe it would be helpful for you to stop right now and write something down you intend to do differently this week before going on to listen to the next tape. Each tape will provide new helpful insights to work on in your family before you move on. If you would like more information about effective parenting, please call us at area code 609-771-8002. Or 1-800-771-8334. We're here to help you.